Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I have one of my favorite guests on, and I'm looking forward to speaking with him. We're going to speak today with Dr. Peter Glidden. He's a naturopath. He's an author. He has a website which is chock full of information about what people need to do to learn how to take care of themselves. And it's important. We are what we eat. And I don't think, I know as a medical student, we didn't get a really good understanding of nutrition. But I've come to learn and think outside the box that we can help ourselves. We don't need to take all these medications and these toxins, and we can help the body heal itself. I think it's self-healing if you get out of the way. And Dr. Glidden has a wealth of information about choices, and he's a thinker, and he's also a truth teller. So I wanted to have you come on today, Dr. Glidden, to talk to us about the COVID situation. It's been bandied about for a year almost, and I've been on the front line listening to a lot of misinformation, and I'm just devastated that people have been living in fear and making choices that are against their best self-interest. I know you have a website, glidden.healthcare.com, I believe it's called, and you have a book that you've written about this. So let's get into it. What's your thought about COVID and how it's been used as a weapon against us?
Well, the easiest place to hide something is in plain sight. And my thought regarding all of this is, where did all of the scientists go? Because what's been happening here, and this is academic, this is not arguable, and anybody can figure this out. You don't have to have a medical degree. It helps if you have a medical degree because you kind of know how to read medical journals and cut right to the chase. But the simple fact of the matter is that the research, the published research, published in peer-reviewed medical journals, does not support the use of wearing masks to prevent the spread of a viral infection. The research does not support social distancing. The research does not support the notion of asymptomatic carriers. The testing is loaded with inaccuracy. And a lot of the research that first came out in March and April of 2020 regarding the coronavirus itself was fraudulent. And let me say that word again. It was fraudulent research, and it was fraught with bad science. And anybody that has a brain who can read would have been able to come to these conclusions because, you know, the sun rises in the east. It doesn't rise in the west. It rises in the east. And 2 + 2 in base 10 mathematics is 4. It's not 5. It's 4. Certain things are immutable and they don't change. And when you read the research through, you don't just read the abstract in the beginning, but when you read the research, you're left with all of these conclusions, which begs the question, why then is the narrative, the public narrative, the worldwide public narrative, the way that it is? And by the way, if there were 10 really good studies which were published that said masks are completely ineffective at stopping the spread of virus particles, and there was one really bad research study that says masks maybe kind of sort of work sometimes, the one really bad study was highlighted and the 10 really good studies were not talked about at all. Mm-hmm. That people, somebody at the top, was cherry picking the research. I think they were doing it on purpose. God only knows what the agenda was. I think it probably had a lot to do in the United States with creating such a panic that they were able to manipulate the voting system for the presidential election. I think there's a lot of bad people who are in charge here. But the simple fact of the matter is that most of what people have been told about the coronavirus is simply not true.
I think that's an excellent overview. And I'd like to tease apart a little bit about each aspect of this. First, it was the testing. Remember, they were trying to get everybody to test and do the PCR. And initially, there were different types of tests. You can do the antibody test, the saliva, and then they settled around the PCR. And I remember reading initially that it was the least sensitive, was most fraught with false positives. And the creator of the PCR test, the doctor or the scientist, I should say, who created it, said it should not be used to diagnose or to basically use it as a test that was sensitive enough to tell people if they actually had coronavirus. I mean, did you hear that? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll read you an extract, excerpt from a little thing that I have on my website that talks about this. So this is where it gets really interesting, because this particular PCR procedure works by looking for, and then by duplicating, gene sequences that researchers have pre-programmed into it. These are referred to as probes and primers. So in order for the PCR test to work, it has to be programmed with a genetic sequence that researchers believe is present in whatever they're looking for. Now, interestingly, the probes and primers that were pre-programmed into the PCR test for SARS coronavirus 2 were never proven to be a part of the virus itself. Let me say that again. The probes and primers that were pre-programmed into the PCR test for SARS coronavirus 2 have never been proven to be a part of the virus itself. So this is why you get false positives and false negatives all the time. I mean, one of the most famous was Governor Mike DeWine from Ohio, who tested negative and then positive on back-to-back tests given on the same day. And then a couple of weeks later, Elon Musk. We took four tests and two were positive and two were negative. That's because the stuff that the test is looking for is based on guesswork. They just guessed at what the genetic sequence should be. Now, there are some people, I don't know whether this is true or not, so I hesitate to speak about it, but it's interesting, and so I will mention it. The gene sequence that was programmed into the PCR test is found on chromosome 6 of the human genetic chromosome makeup. So virtually anybody that's tested will test positive. It's a bad test. The sensitivity and the specificity of the test is bad. It should never have been used to tell people whether or not they have coronavirus or not. And it's been one of the leading causes of the false numbers that have been presented to us around the world. About, you know, oh, we just met 100 million people have just been infected with coronavirus. Well, you don't know that because the testing is inaccurate. And testing can't say that, so those numbers are not accurate. And yet, nobody is standing up and calling BS on it. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not true. I've been calling BS on it. There's a number of medical doctors that have been calling BS on it. But everybody that does call BS on this from an academic point of view, they're censored and taken off of social media.
Yeah, it's been a very concerted effort to silence the truth. And I would go further. I've read recently that not only did, it's like a spike protein, which is very nonspecific. There's no live virus in any of these samples. And the more you amplify it, the less likely you are to get live virus. So you can pick up anybody, not only with the cross reaction with the chromosome, but if you've ever had a cold, you went test positive, but it has nothing to do with COVID-19. So, it's when you're a hammer, everything's a nail, right? So if you're trying to espouse a pandemic, narrative, then it makes sense that everybody's positive. And then you get to do what you just described before, control the election. I think this was a political motivation just as much as it's always about control. But we had to have voting by mail because it was too unsafe. But, when you think about this, you can go to Walmart, but you can't go to your corner store. I mean, people just stop thinking critically altogether, which is really shocking to me. And on that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're Living in the Solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Peter Glidden. He is a naturopath physician. He's been in private practice since 1992. He's written a book, which is really timely, called Shining the Light on Coronavirus Madness. And you can get that on his website, glidden.healthcare/coronavirus. And before the break, we were talking about motivation, and there is no science involved with this. And I want to delve deeper into what we've been told. I remember in medical school, something called herd immunity. And all of a sudden, herd immunity didn't count, which, you know, if we want to go into a little bit more detail, I'll give an overview. Enough people get a disease, as disease passes through the community, it gets less virulent. It means it kills less people, because strategy of any living creature is to perpetuate itself. So if you're killing people with your infections, if you're a virus, then you won't live very long because there's nobody to infect. And all of a sudden, it didn't count, just like you can pass it when you're asymptomatic on a respiratory virus. What's your thought on that? I mean, herd immunity is a thing. They made it sound like it was complete fantasy.
Well, it's a real thing. It's a big thing. And if you look at what's happened in Sweden, it's a testament to the herd immunity. And as more people are exposed to any type of virus or bacteria, the virus or bacteria dies out over time and has less lethality. But more to the point than the whole herd immunity thing, I mean, what strikes me as curious about this, you know, nobody's perfect. And it's fine if, you know, somebody reads the data set wrong, or, you know, doesn't put the comma in the right place, or put the colon or the period in the right place and misses by a factor of 10 or a factor of 100. That's one thing. But when you're just blatantly wrong about everything, mm-hmm. that's another thing, right? These people were blatantly wrong. So, for, you know, let's talk about masks for just a second. Number one, the mask is meant to protect the environment from you, not to protect you from the environment. When we're doing surgery, it's the doctor that wears the mask, not the patient, because the doctor doesn't want to infect the patient with the germs he's breathing out of his mouth and gets into the open wound that he's surgering on the patient. Mm-hmm. So the only people that should be wearing masks are people that think that they're sick. But we've got it backwards. Everybody's wearing a mask now, and everybody thinks that they're wearing a mask to prevent them from getting sick, but that's not the way it is. The only people that should be wearing masks are people that think that they've got it, for whatever reason they think that they've got it. Maybe they've got a fever. Maybe somebody in their house has it. Maybe somebody in their office has it. Maybe somebody in their workplace thinks they have it, whatever. Those people should be staying home anyway. So why are people wearing masks when they're out jogging? Why are people wearing masks when they're in the car? If you think you're sick, you shouldn't be out in public, period. But somehow the use of the mask wearing has been twisted around. It's people think that they're going to protect themselves by wearing a mask. And well, then no, Dr. Glidden, it's all about the asymptomatic carrier. You can have it, not know that you have it, and you can spread it. And that's why you need to wear the mask. Well, number one, masks do not prevent the spread of virus particles. They're too small. The mask is, you know, but thinking that you can protect the exfiltration of a virus from your respiratory tract with a mask is like thinking you can stop a tennis ball with a hula hoop. You can't. You can throw a tennis ball right through a hula hoop because the size matters. The viruses are so unbelievably small. People just have no conceptual ideation of it. And this has become, in fact, reality by consensus. Because science has been abandoned. It's just whatever, you know, Fauci and the CDC and the World Health Organization says, that's what goes, even if it goes contrary to science, accepted science, published science. It's a crap show from start to finish. And it's a testimony, number one, on how gullible people are. Number two, how much faith people put in government. And governmental agencies, especially medical governmental agencies. And I just wonder, you know, where all of the rational thinkers have gone.
It's the megaphone. You have the media, you have the parts of the government coming down on you like a hammer and removing your ability to speak out. I mean, there were consequences for doctors who told the truth. They lost their licenses. They got fired. I mean, they came after us, and it took some really big cojones to go against that. I think it's changing now because it's just so crazy. Everything they say is vice versa. Now you're supposed to wear multiple masks, and then that got dialed back within 24 hours. I do have a quick question about the masks in general. I mean, well, let's talk about the politics, because you mentioned the WHO, CDC, et cetera. These are the same people that seem to be in these places forever. And Fauci, turns out, is the highest paid government official in the entire government. How does that work? I mean, my mantra is always follow the money. So if there's some money to be made, if everybody's going to pass away from this pandemic, then you have to have a vaccine. And who was involved with the vaccine? It's the same people. And if you mandate that, we all have to do it, whether or not we need it. It just seems it's too much. It's too convenient. It's too much. I mean, there's conflict of interest riddle throughout this thing.
Well, there's huge conflicts of interest. And on the governmental side, it all happened with FDR and the Big New Deal. And nobody's taught this in school anymore. But before Roosevelt came around, there was always a separation between the different departments of government. We had the legislative branch, which was Congress and the Senate. We had the executive branch, which is the president. We had the judicial branch. And they were all intended to be separate. And the job of the legislative branch was to make laws. And throughout the first, 150 years of the Republic, every once in a while, someone would come along and they'd try to blur the edges between three different departments of government. The Supreme Court always shut them down. But Roosevelt blurred the three areas of government, and he accomplished it by threatening the members of the Supreme Court, saying that if you don't go along with what I'm proposing, then I'm going to institute term limits on the Supreme Court, and you're all going to be out of jobs in a year. And so what happened was, under FDR's administration, the legislature, the Congress and the Senate, was able to give the authority to make laws to somebody else. They sourced it out. And this gave rise to all of the federal departments of everything, the IRS and the Postal Service and everything. All of the governmental, the CIA, all of the governmental agencies, everybody that works there is appointed. They're not elected. And they make laws that they want to make. They're not elected by we the people. They're appointed by somebody in government. And that was never, ever supposed to happen. But that has happened. And you know, like the fella said, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So since FDR's administration in 1939, 1940, we have had people in the government who are not elected making laws. And that was never meant to happen by the founders, the framers. And the Constitution's been in exile since Roosevelt's administration. Nobody talks about that because, that's quintessential deep state swamp stuff. These people are never going away. And this is a perfect example of absolute power corrupting absolutely, because these people can tell you a pack of lies and nobody challenges them.
That's an excellent point. And I think you can even go further in this maze of connections. You have Congress who stand to gain, right? Their 401ks, their insider trading that's legal for them. They get to make money on mandated vaccines or medications that come out of the blue. I mean, there's all sorts of cronyism that's threaded through this. And it's not about medicine at all. And does this go back to Rockefeller, where he got rid of natural medicine, where it was all about the cure and not about the medication, and that changed the whole education system and the whole paradigm shift of power from the doctor?
That was a big bad voodoo daddy. That happened in 1912 when Congress granted the American Medical Association exclusive control over who could and who couldn't practice medicine, and they did that because of pressure exerted and money exchanged by the Rockefellers and the Carnegie. So this was, in fact, a hostile takeover of medicine in the early 1900s. It was 1912 when it happened. And everybody who was not an MD, the chiropractors, the naturopaths, the herbalists, the acupuncturists, everybody who didn't prescribe drugs, and in those days, drugs were in their infancy, but nonetheless, people who didn't toe that line were called quacks and weren't allowed to practice medicine. It was a monopolization of the medical marketplace, a hostile takeover, and it's been in place longer than anybody's been alive. So people in our generation and, you know, everybody who's alive now in the United States doesn't even know that it's a monopoly, because that's just been how it's been in their life. They didn't know anything else. And this is the biggest reason of if I was, if I had one thing to do to take the Zen sword and like fix all of this in just one swipe, it would be to create a federal Department of Holistic Medicine, which oversaw everything having to do with medicine that didn't have to do with pharmaceuticals. Because right now, the people who are in control of vitamins and minerals and herbs and homeopathy and chiropractic and everything that has to do with medicine that's not AMA sanctioned, they're people who are MDs. It's the competition. My competition is responsible for making laws that categorize my behavior. And it's not fair. It's not just, it's not right. It's a giant monopoly, but it's existed for so long that it's hiding in plain sight. And most people are completely unaware that it exists.
I think it's gone to another degree. Even MDs who are in line with you collegially are also being shut down.
And 100%. It's being taken to a whole different level now, and it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter what your degree is. It doesn't matter what your professional credentials are. It doesn't matter what your research history is. If you do not toe the party line, you are going to be hurt.
I think that's where they'd like it to go. I don't know if they'll make it there all the way. I think patients are wising up. And they're realizing that I see patients every day. Most of them do not want to take a medication. They want to fix the problem. And I'm right along there with them and using every tool available to help them, their body help themselves. And we have to educate people, because it's not about top down. I don't think it's going to be from the bottom up, from the doctor, all doctors, naturopaths, chiropractors, everybody working together to educate the patient. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Peter Glidden. He is an expert in naturopathic medicine. He graduated from Williams College, and he's had a very storied career. He was a pre-med before he decided that he wanted to do something else, and I totally respect that. And he got his doctoral degree in naturopathic medicine in 1991. You know, there's not one way. I think we're all important. I don't subscribe to there's one way to do things. It should be a choice. Everybody should have the ability to pick what works for them to help themselves, whether that's naturopathic medicine, whether that's allopathic, whether that's, you know, things like Qigong, Reiki, whatever your bent is, you should be allowed to do that. And nobody should step in and tell you there's only one way to do it and you should like it.
Well, I mean, you're preaching to the choir. This has been my mantra for the last 30 years, that what we desperately need is a free medical market.
That's true.
A free medical market would change everything, because then people would, in fact, have a choice. You know, I mean, honest to God, if by some genie in the bottle magic, we all woke up tomorrow and, you know, insurance covered chiropractic and acupuncture and naturopathic and homeopathic and botanical medicine and Ayurvedic medicine and traditional Chinese medicine, and there was just as much research done in universities on all these disciplines as is done now for pharmaceutical intervention, it would be a completely different world in 5 years. It would be a completely different world. Because you are absolutely positively right. Sometimes MD-directed medicine is exactly what the doctor ordered, but frequently it's not. But when that's the only choice that you have, you're going to go to it. And even when it fails, even when it bankrupts you, even when it kills your loved one, you have no choice in the matter. And this is the only reason that this type of monopolistic madness has maintained its position, is because of the unbelievable financial power and political persuasion that the pharmaceutical industry has. And you know, most people their jaws drop when I tell them this. But as a licensed naturopathic doctor, I can prescribe drugs. I don't have a problem with drugs. Thank God for insulin. Thank God for lidocaine. Thank God for the sterile technique, right? This isn't an anti-drug, you know, diatribe. Let's have a free medical market diatribe. Let everybody, let's invite everybody to the table. And I have to tell you, if I had a broken arm, heaven forbid, or a bullet in my arm, heaven forbid, I'm not going to go to the naturopath's office. I'm not going to go to the chiropractor. I'm going to go right to the MD because that's their wheelhouse. That's what they're really good at. Emergency medicine, trauma care, military field medicine, fantastic stuff. But for help with viral infection, so that the last person I'm going to go to is the MD. The first person I'm going to go to is the naturopath, because that is, in fact, our wheelhouse. That is where we shine, and that is our skill set.
And from a healthcare perspective, it's a perfect panoramic medical system. You don't need the hammer to kill all these things. You need to prevent, right? I mean, the cost of healthcare would be a fraction of what it is if we can prevent the disease from the get-go and not spend all this. I mean, I watch these drug commercials every night on TV. It's always these long lists of bad effects. But what about prevention? They never talk about prevention of cancer or lung disease or whatever it is. They just don't seem, well, it's not how they make money, is it? It's about keeping you on something for the rest of your life, daily.
Well, it's disease management. It's not healthcare, and it should be illegal to call it healthcare because it's completely misleading. But you know, it's a point that's well taken. Yeah, I'm in a professional support group of naturopathic doctors. There's hundreds of us that get together once every 6 weeks and, you know, trade clinical notes and things. Not one of my naturopathic colleagues, not one, has had a COVID-19 patient that's needed to be hospitalized or that died. Not one of them. I have a friend of mine. He's probably the most famous Ayurvedic physician in North America. He was the first Ayurvedic medical doctor to also become a licensed naturopathic doctor. We were in school together. He has a thriving practice outside of Seattle, 32 years of experience in the U.S., and he has positive testimony of administering a preventive protocol to 2,000 of his regular patients, a coronavirus prevention program that yielded 100% success rate. 100% success rate. 2,000 of his regular patients prevented from getting coronavirus because of the simple things that he advocated. And this is, honest to God, this is, you know, the best kept secret in the 21st century is this stuff. It's the skill set that licensed and regulated naturopathic doctors bring to the table. And by the way, science-based, clinically verified. We're not pulling this stuff out of our rear end, throwing it and see if it sticks. We're proving it, that it works, and then sharing it with the world. Let's be honest. Most people don't even know how to pronounce naturopathy, right? Let alone know what a naturopathic doctor is or have any idea of what our skill set is, Dr. George. And this is why I really appreciate you allowing me to be here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, because we both want the same thing, which is to help people stay healthy and to regain their health if they don't have it. And you have a book on your website, which people definitely need to go to. Again, it's glidden.healthcare/coronavirus. And it's a book about naturopathic strategies to help you stay healthy and optimize your immune system. And that's really what it comes down to. If you can have a barrier, if your immune system can work, you can fight these things. What are some of the things that people need to do to
Some simple things that everybody can do. You don't have to. There are a couple of supplements that it's a good idea to get. But there are some botanical medicines that will help. But there are simple things that people can do. I'll give you a couple. Number one, eat 60 grams of protein a day. Make sure you swallow 60 grams of protein a day. Do a internet search to figure out how much that is. It's not a lot. But your immune system is made from protein. That's what it's made from. I mean, your bones are made from calcium and minerals. If you break a bone, it's probably a good idea to take a mineral supplement because that's what the bones are made from. If you are trying to upregulate your immune system, probably a good idea to give your body the raw materials it needs to do that, and that's protein. So a really simple thing to do is just eat 60 grams of protein every day, number one. Number two, get an organic lemon, cut it in half, and squeeze the juice into a cup of hot water and drink it down. Do that twice a day. This provides your body with something called full-spectrum vitamin C, which is very different than ascorbic acid. Ascorbic acid, most people think of vitamin C, or if you get most vitamin C supplements at the health food store, it's not full-spectrum vitamin C, it's ascorbic acid. Full-spectrum vitamin C is like a school bus filled with children, right? And each one of the people inside is a different biochemical that the immune system can use to feel better, to make itself stronger. Ascorbic acid is just the bus with nobody inside of it. Nobody inside of it, just the bus. So full-spectrum, way better. There's only a couple of supplement companies that actually make a full-spectrum vitamin C in a tablet form. I think the easiest and most economical way to do it is to just drink a organic lemon, juice from an organic lemon every day. And last but not least, and this is where you're going to stop liking me, do a cold rinse at the end of a hot shower. So take a shower, right? Everybody takes a hot shower. At the end of the shower, and you're going to want to tell the people that you're living with that you're going to do this, or the people in the apartment above or below you that you're going to do this. Put a towel down on the floor of the shower so you don't slip and fall, and then turn the hot water completely off all at once. And blast yourself with the cold water for a good 30 seconds. Run in place if you need to. Bounce up and down. Yell. Say your Hail Marys out loud. Do whatever you need to do to stay in the cold water. It's really the first 5 seconds of the worst. And when you blast yourself with the cold water after a hot shower, there have been numerous studies that have shown, by the way, with before and after blood work, that components of your immune system are upregulated. It's one of the easiest things to do. It's really inexpensive. And once you get used to it, you know, you kind of look forward to it, because how you feel after the fact is really quite remarkable.
Wow, that's about as cheap and effective as I can even imagine.
I know. And I've written about all this stuff and more with this document put on my website. You know, it's just a shame that more people are not aware of this. I mean, 2,000 people prevented from getting coronavirus just from doing simple things like this. And this isn't rocket science. But inside of a medical monopoly, right, inside of a censored social media platform, you don't have access to this. Oh, by the way, when coronavirus first came out, I interviewed four of my colleagues, and Dr. Sodhi was one of them. And I put together a pay-per-view thing that we sold on YouTube and through Vimeo. And Vimeo censored it after 4 days. They just took it down. And this was science-based, clinically verified information developed and delivered by licensed physicians in the United States. They took it down because it wasn't consistent with, you know, the World Health Organization narrative. And honest to God, there needs to be a revolution.
I think maybe this is going to trigger it. It's so onerous. It's been so awful that they didn't. I mean, there's no empathy for anybody, whether you're senior, whether you're just starting out in life, whether you have a business, they don't care. This is about control and about everybody towing the line. To take your website, your webinar down because you speak the truth, and people who are critical thinkers will start thinking and saying, wait, this is wrong. Let's do something different. They expect us to just follow like sheep down a path against our own interest. And whatever happened with this political nonsense that's been going on, I think it's awakened a lot of people to, this is all a grid. They're all working in alignment with each other. The YouTubers, these Twitter folks, they're all about the same meme, which is to hold back the truth, make us think that we're dependent on them and that we have no choice, and to break our will. I think there's no other way to see it. On that
note, history doesn't repeat itself. It rhymes, right? And so what did they do in World War II Germany? They burned the book, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we're
seeing the same
thing.
They bombed the Reichstag and then they blamed it on the other people. And what's happening here? It's the same stuff.
Well, there's nothing new under the sun, right?
Different generations, nothing new under the sun. It's a little crazy. But there's people like you, people like me, that are in fact standing up. And I'll never forget one of my favorite sayings. I don't know where I first picked this up, but it's true. Once you have experienced the truth, you're in its velvet grasp forever, right? You know, even when Cro-Magnon people were inhabiting the Earth and they didn't know anything about mathematics, 2 + 2 = 4, and gravity existed and things fell at 32 feet per second and water boils at 100 degrees centigrade. It always has and it always will, because these things are based on natural law. And naturopathic medical therapeutics, by and large, are based on natural law. And you can't, I mean, you can censor these things. You can put the kibosh on them. You can burn these books, but the information, the knowledge is still there. And it always will be there until somebody comes along and discovers it again and gives it to the people again. There's so much that people can do to prevent this, number one, and number two, if they do have it, to dramatically shorten its lifespan in the body and dramatically increase your chances of a favorable outcome. It's really one of the easiest things in the world to treat, honestly. It's not difficult at all.
Let's explore that further when we come back from the break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Dr. Glidden. And before the break, you made some really tantalizing statements about how, you know, I think we really had the fear of God put into us about this. Once you contract it, there is no coming back. Your chance of living is basically nil. And that's really been hammered home, from the running count of the mortality rate to the running count of the case rate now. But what you're saying, I have the same experience in my practice. This is treatable. This is avoidable if you actually pre-treat yourself and get your immune system straight. So before the break, we talked about things like lemon and cold showers. What happens if you do get the symptoms and you become infected? What supplements do you recommend then to help you?
Well, we recommend the ones that have proven to work clinically, right? So in the wonderful world of botanical medicine, hands down the most effective medicine for immune system upregulation, and specifically when we are attempting to deal with a viral infection, which is different than a bacterial infection. There's really been some interesting research that's been done on olive leaf. In 1962, an Italian researcher recorded that an active constituent in olive leaf called oleuropein, it has the ability to lower blood pressure in animals. It dilates the blood vessels so that the blood may flow more evenly through the system. A Dutch researcher identified that a primary ingredient in olive leaf inhibited the growth of viruses. The chemical was called linoleic acid. And further European research determined that this compound had strong antiviral capabilities, inhibited viruses from replicating. And that's what the viruses love to do. They love to make copies of themselves and replicate and spread. This particular biochemical, linoleic acid, in the olive leaf prevented that from happening. And, you know, I've always said that when push comes to shove, who are you going to trust? You're going to trust God? You're going to trust Mother Nature? Or are you going to trust the pharmacist? Well, I think I'll take God for $500. So when we figure out which botanical medicine is most effective here, then the only question is, well, you know, how are we going to grow it? When are we going to harvest it? How are we going to extract the constituents from it? And how are we going to use it? And all of those variables, which are very, very, very important, have been handled by my profession, because that's what we do. We bring the scientific method to bear to answer all of these questions. And keep in mind, all wine is made from grapes, but there is a pretty big difference from bottle to bottle based on all of similar variables. Now, not all chicken soup is the same based on lots of variables. It's the same in the wonderful world of botanical medicine. And so when you lean on the professionals who actually know what the heck they're doing, and you have an herb, botanical medicine, that has shown its effectiveness, for instance, in stopping viral replication, then that's a home run. And my favorite company that makes this, and that I don't have any financial connections to, is called the Good Herbs Company. The product is called Super Olive Health. And the recommendation is 4 milliliters 4 times a day if you're sick. And we also use it for prevention, but in a much less frequent dose.
I want to explore that a little bit, because people think, they don't really understand that all supplements are not created equally. And people go to Walmart and these big box stores and the pharmacies and think that they're getting the same thing. Can you speak to that? Because there have been recalls coming out of China, all sorts of stuff. What can people do to know?
I'm going to ring my own chime here. I'm one of the world's leading experts on vitamin manufacture and quality control. Years ago, when I first graduated naturopathic medical school, a friend of mine who was a couple of years ahead of me, who was a pharmacist before he became a naturopathic doctor, looked around and saw that the quality control in the nutritional supplement industry was horrible. I mean, it wasn't just bad, it was horrible. So he decided he was going to start a nutritional supplement company based on really excellent quality control. And he did. It was called Vital Nutrients. And you can only get a Vital Nutrients product if you're a licensed healthcare provider. Most nutritional supplement companies, they do something called skip lot testing, which means, you know, over the course of a year, maybe they'll buy 125 kilo barrels of vitamin C or echinacea or olive leaf or vitamin D like David or whatever, but they buy it in huge quantities, right, in big barrels. And most vitamin companies randomly test their raw material for mold and contamination and authenticity and a lot of other things. Is it grade A? Is it grade B? Is it grade C, right? Vital Nutrients started testing every batch of every raw material that they got. Every batch. They didn't do skip lot testing. That's a massive amount of money, by the way. Big overhead, which is why most vitamin companies didn't do it. Once Vital Nutrients started testing every batch of raw materials, they would reject between 14 and 23% of their raw materials because it was bad. Said echinacea, but it was really a hydrastis. It was said it was grade A fish oil, but it was grade C fish oil. And guess what? There was blood in it. And they rejected it. Now, somebody bought it. Because that's the supplement manufacturer who makes the raw materials, they're not going to throw that stuff away. They're going to sell it to somebody else. So it's a big bad voodoo daddy. The government has stepped up over the last 10 years. They have better rules and regulations for product manufacture, but honestly, they're not sufficient for the cause. There's really only a handful of companies that I can confidently say to my patients, yeah, the quality control here is good. And if it says on the label that it's, 500 milligrams of vitamin E, then you can take that to the bank and that there's actually 500 milligrams of vitamin E in it and that it came from a good source. You can't do that with most of the stuff that you get over the counter. And it's a problem.
Oh, definitely. That's good to know. And I just want to because we're almost to the end of the show, I just want to do a couple of fast spot questions. How much vitamin D daily should someone take?
Well, so vitamin D, there's a lot of misrepresentation and misinformation about vitamin D, and it's not a short answer, but vitamin D is not a vitamin, it's a hormone. Mm-hmm. And the single best way to get a hormone into the human body is to have the human body manufacture it. So better than taking a vitamin D supplement, you should get a little lamp. They make these little lamps that you can put on your bathroom, countertop. And you sit in front of this lamp for 5 minutes every other day, and it's ultraviolet radiation at a certain wavelength, and your body makes all the vitamin D that it needs to. That's a much better way to get vitamin D because, sit down, this is a nice segue from what we were talking about before, but most vitamin D that's put into nutritional supplements comes from sheep's wool that has been irradiated in China. So I'm not a big fan of supplemental vitamin D. It's hard to find a product that doesn't have supplemental vitamin D. I am a big fan of naturally occurring vitamin D, and you can just do a web search for, vitamin D lights, right? Okay. A couple hundred bucks, one of the best investments you'll ever make. Sit in front of it for 5 minutes every other day in the winter, and you'll have all the vitamin D that you need.
Okay, so my next question would be about salt, because everybody's told, especially with high blood pressure, you shouldn't have salt. It's like toxic. What's the story with salt?
Well, that's another thing, reality by consensus, which is curious because it was in the 1958, I believe, which is the year that I was born, that Harvard University proved and published that salt was not related to high blood pressure, salt intake. And that research was confirmed a couple of years ago. I think it was Tufts University that did it. You can overdo it with salt, but that's hard to do. Most people are egregiously they don't have nearly enough salt in their body. Salt was so important in the Roman Empire that Roman soldiers were paid in salt. That's where the term salary came from. the root of the word salary is salt. Salt is a really important nutrient for the human body. I prefer Himalayan salt, the Celtic sea salt, or my favorite in the United States is real salt from the Great Salt Lake in Utah. And my recommendation, salt your food so that it tastes good. Your body will let you know when you need more. Your body will let you know when you've had enough. And parenthetically, most people, because they've been on a salt-restricted diet, because their medical doctors are just lazy and they're not staying current with the research, are deficient in salt. So when I tell them, hey, start putting salt on your food, well, they do. And then for 3-4 days, they're craving salt. They can't get enough salt because their body knows it needs it. And then after 3-4 days, the craving kind of cuts down, and then they don't need as much. But you try it out for yourself. Your body knows what's best. Salt is arguably one of the most important nutrients you can take into your body. But use it liberally on your food, and your body will tell you when you've had enough.
And what about iodine? That's another thing, since they took it out of the salt that we get.
Yeah. Well, this is a really interesting thing to talk about because, you know, on the one hand, medical doctors, and they should be sued, for goodness sakes, they should have their medical licenses revoked by saying stuff like this. But, you know, they'll say, oh, you know, those vitamins, they just give you expensive urine and there's no benefit to them, so you don't need to take them. But, oh, yeah, if you're taking vitamins, you have to stop taking them before surgery because they can interfere with surgery. And those two statements are mutually exclusive. They counter each other, but nobody calls them on it. And this is kind of further exposed by the whole iodine. I think it was in the 1920s or the 1930s in the United States, there was an epidemic of swollen thyroids, which is called goiter. And there was a goiter belt in the Midwest of the U.S. Thousands of people had swollen thyroids. Thousands of people, tens of thousands of people had goiter. So somebody in the federal government did something right. Somebody in the FDA did something right, and they figured out that one of the main causes of this was a deficiency in iodine. So all they did was put iodine in salt and have people start using iodized salt. And in a couple of months, all the swollen thyroid went away. They cured the goiter epidemic in a couple of months with salt that had been supplemented with iodine. Why? Because iodine is an essential nutrient to the human body. Your body needs it, but it can't make it. And if your body runs out of it, it's only a matter of time until something breaks. And then if you intervene quickly enough and put it back, your body fixes itself. It's the same with rickets and vitamin D and scurvy with vitamin C and cleft palate with a folic acid. You know, I see all these commercials, oh, you know, donate $25 a month and Doctors Without Borders will go to Africa and they'll perform all these surgeries on the kids with cleft palate. And that's not a bad idea, but a better idea is just to spend 25 cents on every kid and give them folic acid, you know, while the mother's pregnant. You'll prevent it. I mean, which is a smarter, better, more efficient way to do things? It's to prevent it. But, you know, we're inside of a medical monopoly with, and
I know.
Oh my God.
I got you. But you know, everything that you do makes a difference. If we can reach one person, that makes a difference. In the seconds that we have, how can people get to your website and get your books?
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Glidden, my last name is Glidden, like the paint, no relation. GLIDDEN. I have two websites, glidden.healthcare, glidden.healthcare. It's not .com, it's glidden.healthcare. And my other website, riseupintohealth.com, riseupintohealth.com. Both of those websites have links for my coronavirus info and my books. Also, lots of other information that I have on there by way of self-help, health recovery, because there's so many things that people can do. If you've got high blood pressure, there's things that you should be doing every day to help your body get on the other side of it. You have fibromyalgia, you have rheumatoid arthritis, you have insomnia. There's things that you can do. In the comfort of your own home, which are science-based and clinically verified, by the way, that will help you. And I've provided tons of that information on both of my websites, riseupintohealth.com or glidden.health.
On that note, thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.